Okay, good morning. So this is the last lecture. Last time we looked over some of the aspects of 4G cellular technology and in terms of the key technologies, we looked at orthogonal frequency division multiplexing and MIMO, so multi-input, multi-output techniques, as ways of either increasing data rates and also increasing the signal quality. Additionally, we noted that the 4G quality of service issues were becoming of more interest just because of the data in general is becoming more interesting with certain data applications that are currently being used, like streaming video conferencing, etc., do require some quality of service support. And so within that framework, we looked at some of the features of the main 4G standards, so LTE, LTE advanced, and then WiMAX, and WiMAX more advanced. So today we're going to move on to our last topic, which is Bluetooth. Now this will not be examined, so it's for interest, and again, we do see some of the same things cropping up again and again in terms of how these wireless networks are set up. I think pretty much all of them are out of stones. If you're interested, that's where this came from. I think probably in the version of the notes I posted from this, there's a Paleo Electronics website which seems to have disappeared. So then Radio Electronics has a good tutorial if you just want to skim through that. Okay, so what is Bluetooth? And, what are the technologies we've looked at? Well, we've looked at wireless LAN technology, so Wi-Fi. And this has a single purpose, pretty much. You're trying to get packets from one device to another. Cellular telephony. And you can think it's got fairly unified purpose. initially providing voice connectivity, and later voice packet connectivity. And again, packet in both those cases is something. IP packets. Bluetooth is a little different in that it's sort of a grab bag of different uses and applications, all of which require just a short wireless connection. So it's relatively low data rate. It's low distance, and then set up with a bunch of different things. So it's in that unlicensed 2.4 gigahertz band, and a typical application will want to connect over the distance of a room maybe, and relatively slow data rates by modern standards. And you can get up to megabits, you can get further distances as well, but that's sort of typically what's envisaged. And the idea here is basically, wouldn't it be nice if we have all the sort of single purpose applications, like I want to connect to a printer, I want to have hands free in my car. I want to send file from my laptop to his laptop. I want this, there's all sorts of, you'll get a little grab bag of applications that it would be sort of handy to be able to do without carrying around a bunch of wires, a bunch of modems, a bunch of kits. So basically what Bluetooth does is it tries to support that grab bag of applications. And the way it does that is basically at the low end it's providing a wireless link, and then at the higher end it provides a bunch of interfaces that make it look like a telephone modem, make it look like a serial cable, make it look like things that the devices already recognize so that you can send data through. So, again, it's, you have to think of it in terms of supporting a whole pile of applications that, it's more convenient sort of over the short range to do that. It arose from industry. Ericsson first proposed it and developed the Bluetooth Consortium. It was standardized by the IEEE as 802.15.1, and since then the IEEE standard and the Bluetooth standards have diverged again. Bluetooth source thing, within its original limitations. I could really get into things like personal area networks and things like that. It's developed and licensed by the Bluetooth Special Interest Group, which there's a website you can look at if you're interested. And again, they'll set the standards and they'll validate compliance with the standards. And changes to standards are only done by working groups by negotiation. Okay. So, again, Bluetooth is it's catering for this grab bag of different tasks that we want done. So we might want a data or a voice access point. So again, you can move data to from different devices or a voice signal to from different devices without a wire. So again, getting a file from point A to point B, using a hands-free and power, things like that. You might want to use it as cable replacements. So again, if you've got a printer across the room, one way of connecting it would be through a Bluetooth connection. And finally, it can support ad hoc networking. So you can allow a bunch of devices to hook up and exchange basically IP packets. Okay. Okay, so we've already gone through a bunch of these applications. So again, just getting data from point A to point B, or a voice signal from point A to point B, so you have sort of a convenient access point. Okay. And so, a lot of it might be, letting things, a smartphone or a PC, you might connect them up. Hands-free car. You might just synchronize data across different devices, or again, you might want to make a more packet-oriented connection. Okay. So, again, the way it does this is it uses this, they have a defined protocol stack, not the TCP/IP stack, and which provides sort of a basic physical layer, so allows point-to-point communication, and then a bunch of interfaces that allow the connection to sort of emulate either cables or modems or other forms of then wired data. So the two main categories that are catered for them would be cable replacement and wireless audio. So either data exchange or voice exchange. Okay. Well, what we're going to see is that, again, there is this protocol stack that's meant to do a lot of different things. So then we have to pick and choose different pieces of it to achieve any specific application. And so the specific applications are defined as usage models, and they will use, again, some portion of the protocol specs, and then these are these have to be defined, and again, compliance or interoperability is going to be based on that usage model. Okay, so within the Bluetooth architecture, there's a number of different components. We have core protocols, so that's the service discovery protocol, our logically controlled navigation protocol, link management baseband, and Bluetooth, and those are the key protocols that are unique to Bluetooth. And again, they're providing sort of our physical connection, and then they're providing interface to various services or data types. Then there's protocols that again are aimed at sort of specific are two specific categories, either cable replacement or telephony control. And so within telephony control, call control and it's a bit modem-like, that emulates a modem. And then RFCOM is emulating a serial port. So then one could send data to a modem, something that's expecting a modem. You have to include these portions. You have the possibility of, again, of IP data tracking. And then beyond that, there's it also interfaces with commonly used protocols, all of the uses of those pulse width modulation, and then you can interface with an IP-based via the TCP/IP stack, or again replace. Well, that's the protocol for sending binary data. Okay. So, again, depending what you're doing, I want to send an IP packet, I want to send just a bit of binary data, I want to make set up a telephone call, depending what you're doing, you're going to use different parts of this stack. Okay, and so again, we have the core protocols, cable replacement, and telephony control protocols, and adopted protocols for what's going to use in other applications. In the core protocols, then we have sort of think of it as a Bluetooth stack. So you have a radio layer, which is all the physical aspects of the wireless radio transmission, a baseband layer, which is, again, establishing that physical connectivity, link management, so the higher level, establishing physical connectivity between two different devices, then the logic link control and adaptation protocol, so again, providing connections for connection-oriented packet data service. And finally, service discovery protocol. So this allows various devices to negotiate, to find out about each other and negotiate with each other about what services are on offer. Okay. And so again, the cable replacement protocol is the RFCOM, and components of virtual serial port, and so just allows you to replace the serial port cable. Your telephony control protocols are ECS bins, which is responsible for signaling, and then another one which protocols that are adopted from other areas. Okay. So again, the idea is you pick out which features are required for any use case. And so we have a few examples here, we won't put them all, but you can see for all of them, you have to have your link control and adaptation protocol, and you have to have your service discovery protocol. Okay, so you need someone letting everybody know what service you have on offer and or finding somebody offering that service. Okay. So again, if you think of something like a file transfer, then again, this is just it's moving a binary object. So we need send it port, and the object exchange protocol can handle data transfer over that server. If you want it to join up into the TCP/IP stack, then again, you can use the control and adaptation. You need your service discovery. You would then think about sending order for a serial port, and it could be we have some networks module is used to connect, is used in the data that connect, and then you insert whatever bars, protocol, is required, such as. Some sort of audio signal, if it's a telephone signal, you would use TCSBs to manage call control, and then you could do the audio directly. If it's over, if it's not collecting the audio, adopted protocols to manage them and directly. So, again, for whatever use case you have, you're picking out portions of the protocol, you're not using everything, you're having to tune these in some certain way. And so the usage model specifies what protocols are being used. And again, within that, there's a lot of, there's still going to see, there's still a lot of options which we have pinned down. And so that, those sorts of options are pinned down in the profile, which identifies protocols and protocol features that support a particular usage model. Okay, so that's just a list of the usage models that we saw on the previous slide, so I won't go through that. So, that essentially, again, is pulling out subset, in particular, of the upper layers of this protocol stack, in order to make any sort of connection. Again, we're going to have to go through all of the core layers of our protocol. So what we're going to do now is have a look at the issues relating to these core layers of the protocol and how the network actually gets set up. Okay. So Bluetooth uses a master-slave relationship. And so slaves can only communicate with the master. So now information flows to from the master. The basic arrangement for this is what's called a PicoNet. And in this case, the PicoNet consists of a master and between 1 and 7 active slave devices. The master is allowed to be aware of, shall we say, a good number more devices, actively up to 7 devices. The master controls the communication links, so decides how those links are set up. And then it decides who's communicating with that. And so a slave only communicates with the master when it's given permission. So the master is in full control of the links. In any given area, you might have a number of Tikkunets at work. And so it's possible that they can interfere with each other because there's no, there's no coordination between individual Tikkunets. It's possible to have broader networks, scattered net, and here a device in one Tikkunet can be either a master or a slave or a second Tikkunet. And so if this is done, it is possible to have some coordination over the use of channels sort of eliminate competition. Okay, so again, what we've looked at so far is cellular, where everything is sort of very well defined. Ad hoc systems where there's typically no control whatsoever, and then these scatter nets where we do have masters who are making some attempts to control the communication, but aren't necessarily cooperating with each other as it would be for cellular systems. Okay, so as we saw for sort of early cellular systems, like Gaussian frequency shift keying modulation is used. So again, a good trade-off between power expenditure and the efficiency. Bluetooth transmitters are classed according to their power output. And so class one is has the greatest power output and therefore the greatest range. And its power control is mandatory because it's a higher level. Class two has lower power output and optional power control. And class three has a very low power output. So it's a very small range, but again, if that's sufficient, then great. Okay. So, Bluetooth uses frequency hopping. Both to improve its own signals and also to try to sort of avoid collisions between multiple Ethernets. And so, again, logical channels are sort of assigned frequency bandwidths, but the master will decide at any given point what specific frequency channel is being used. Okay. And so it has all the advantages of frequency hopping that we've seen before, and again, multiple access between a number of different Piconets. Okay. So the bandwidth is divided into 1 megahertz physical channels, and typically there are 79 of these available. So frequency hopping occurs by jumping from one channel to another according to some code, and of course course, the Ethernet shares the same code. Okay. So, what we'll see later is, again, because the master is controlling all communications, there's no chance of collisions within a Picanet. However, if you have more than one Picanet running in the same area, you can have collisions, and you try and minimize the number by having near orthogonal hop sequences. Collisions are usually just handled as through some surveyor queue mechanism. Okay. Now, the way a master and a slave communicates is the communication takes place in one direction at a given time. And so you can think of having slots. And so the master transmits in the first slot, the slave in the second, the master in the third, etc. So it's a channel taking that master. So the hop rate is 1600 hops, typically 1600 hops per second. And so that gives you your time slot. And it only transmits around in a single direction at a time. If you have multiple slaves, then they share the time slots with the master. Sorry, not with the master, with each other. So, if it's possible for a transmission to go for 1, 3, or 5 slots, so you can have a greater transmission period between the alternations. The frequency chosen lasts for the entire slot. Two different sorts of links can be provided between a master or a slave. You have a synchronous connection-oriented link, and this corresponds to trying voice communication. And so you allocate a certain bandwidth. There's some extra bandwidth allocated for the principal link, control of the link. And the master then can support up to 3 of these nets. Synchronous connection oriented packets are not, data is not retransmitted, which again makes sense that it's oriented towards voice, it's timely, the time for retransmission, and it's also error tolerant. The voice applications are error tolerant, so you don't need any data. Also provides a synchronous connection. This links, and that's your data link. And so this is point to multipoint between masters and all slaves. Uses slots not reserved for synchronous connections, and only one is can exist at a time. Within that link, again, lost data is retransmitted. Okay, so I'm not going to dwell on packet formats. Just to say that, again, we've got three main parts. We've got access code, header, you could call it. We've got a data header, and then we've got payload. And so access codes are used for authentication and are used for joining into the network. And then the header is used for setting data connections. Okay. So what's involved in joining into a network? Well, you have to synchronize, and then you have time slots. You know what the slots are. Paging and inquiry. So again, this is the idea of finding devices that want to join the network. Indicating that we want to actually do something. Okay, so in that you've got channel access codes for identifying the network, you've got device access codes for identifying devices, and then inquiry access codes, which are used to get anything inquiries from who's out there. I thought I had that safely tucked in. The usual problem now. Oh, no. Okay, good. And so, again, the header identifies packet type and whatever protocol control information. And then payload is the user data. Error correction is used. What error correction is used is, again, depending on what type of data is being sent. 1-3 rate forward error correction is used for packet header and voice data, and for each bit sent, for each bit, 3 bits of sent, and then we use mutual array rules. 2-3 forward error correction is used mainly for data fields, and that allows for correction of a single error or detection of double errors. And when errors are detected, you can, depending again on what the data is, you may choose to do it, some sort of resend of the data. So again, the ARQ scheme is pretty much a stop and wait scheme. The master will acknowledge, you can give either positive or negative acknowledgments. And again, remember that they're already sending, so using a turn-taking mechanism to communicate. You also have the possibility of retraction. The ARQ is called Fast ARQ again because it makes use of this turn-taking mechanism for communication. Okay. And so, again, as a master is communicating with the slave, he sends data, gets acknowledged, data fails to be sent, and so it's corrupted, there's a negative acknowledgement, and that data is sent again. This time it gets acknowledged. If data gets corrupted from a slave, then again, they send a negative acknowledgement. So, that's again, an F is sent and not received. If the data is not received, the Z is not received, then again, the master will move its next communication with slave 2 will indicate that, and the data will be sent at that point. Okay, so you just essentially whatever the next available slot. Indicates the negative acknowledgement, you do it, and then since the slave will then communicate right after that, they immediately send the lost data. Okay. So again, this sort of way of doing things leads to a bunch of different purposes for the data channels, which again can be labeled as logical channels and according to their purposes. So you have link control, and typically that's carried in the header and then just the packets. You have link management, which allows you to set up, authenticate, and configure your link according to whatever purpose you're using it. And that's carried in a data channel, essentially. Then you have data. Data links, and again, depending on how the data is being sent, that can be viewed as a different channel. Okay. So each node then of a PicoNet it has a number of states it can be in. It can be either in standby or connection. And so in standby, it's just waiting to do something. It's not actively involved in a network, and then in connection, it's actually actively. Interim states then are used to move from sort of not connected to connected. And so, again, the two major states inquiry page, and so there various states in inquiry are looking to see who's out there, and then page are actively trying to connect. Okay. So, in order to form the network, we start with an inquiry procedure. And so here, a master will identify the potential slaves that want to participate in the PIPA Net. It does this by transmitting an IP packet. With an inquiry access code over a broad range of channels. These are called wake-up carriers, so the any node listening will scan these carriers to see periodically see if there's anyone offering connection. So the master does this while in the inquiry state, and it stays in this inquiry state until it's satisfied it's found everybody who's in this. So potential slaves, again, move between standby and inquiry scan. To listen to see if anything was out there. Will it set the net up or keep the net? When it's responding to an inquiry, it returns information that allows the master to communicate directly with it, and then it moves into a page scan state. So then the page procedure is used to actually set up the connection. So the master determines the frequency hopping sequence it's going to use, and it informs the slaves of this, and the slaves respond using that frequency hopping sequence, and again, a bunch of handshaking occurs, and a connection is made. So the master will do this for all of the different slaves and then move into the connection state. Slaves can be in a number of states. While part of the PicoNet, they can be active or parked, so inactive, or a number of sort of nodes within active. Only seven. There can only be seven participants at a given time, and the rest need to be in the parked state. The baseband specification allows you to directly send audio signals from that layer, and so it provides a couple of encoding schemes by which that can happen. Okay. And so which encoding scheme is actually used is a matter of negotiation. Okay. So that's allows for these basic links to be set up between masters and slaves, management of the links, and the exact particulars of the links is handled by the link management protocol, so it sits on top of that. Okay, and so it's responsible for encryption and authentication, clock synchronization, device states, switching master, so entering and exiting the links. Okay, so it does this by sending control packets. And you know, they obviously have to transmit whatever information is needed for the services provided by the link management protocol. Okay. So, again, I don't really want to go into all the details about what they do. Again, just, you know, there's a certain number of things that you can manage, and then you send the control packets to arrange them. Okay. So, that again sets up a basic connection between sender, between masters and slaves, and directly from that basic connection you can do things like send voice data. If you want to send packetized digital data, then you need a multiplayer protocol to allow that to happen. Okay. So the control and adaptation protocol is again it's like the logical link control layer for it's like the connection layer for the data link layer for an OSI stack. So it manages packetized stream of data. So it relies on the baseband for error control. And it's not used for the sending voice data, but it's sending packet data. It provides connectionless and connection-oriented services. So, you know, the connectionless service, again, that's a per packet service. The connection oriented is supports it in the stream into bidirectional channels and provides makes provisions for quality of service. Okay. negotiate quality of service parameters and essentially in terms of how many resources you'll get. How frequently we can do that transfers. And so obviously the signal also has to be provided to arrange these services. So the signaling is used to set up these connections. Appropriate responses from remote units. Quality of service is basically a negotiation of data rates, and so peak and average bandwidths can be catered for using token buckets, and you can also make things like delay and latency. And again, that's all essentially a token-based service that's controlled by the master. Okay, so again, that's a very quick overview of what Bluetooth is all about. Again, the details may or may not be interest. The actual solutions that are arrived at tend to be sort of proprietary and sort of specific to given services. Bluetooth was standardized in the 802.15 standard, which is the wireless personal area network standard, and so 802.15.1 is based on Bluetooth. But since that standard has diverged, 802.15.2 deals with other further versions of 802.15 deal with other, again, personal areas, as short-range networks. And so Zigbee has been standardized. Mesh networking has addressed body area networks, higher rates, etc. So they still trend along, but again, not too many of these are across. Zigbee is commercial, but a lot of these are non-commercial offerings. Okay. So that's it for Bluetooth, and that's it for the course content then. Okay, so I can already see a typo in this. So apologies for that. In terms of the material, this material is examinable. The topics are correct. Obviously, we didn't cover this in weeks 2 through 9. Week 11, the last 4G was week 11. But in terms of what's examinable, everything except the introductory stuff, it sort of underpins a lot of what we've said, so It's not that you don't have to know some of it, but I'm not going to ask any questions explicitly. I'm not going to ask you what the OSI stack is explicitly. The guest lecture, well, very interesting. Not to examine, and today's lecture is not examined. So that leaves you with the digital comms model, RF links, red spectrum, cellular basics, wireless LANs, and various flavors of cellular networks, with a discussion of WiMAX embedded in that. So, what material do you have to study? The lecture notes, so a complete set of those is available, then the guest lecture is also available. And, you know, if you're really masochistic, the Camtasia recordings of all these lectures. For you guys who are sitting here, once would be enough. Two problem sets have been posted, and I think I made the solutions visible. Yes? No? Well, I'll check, but the solutions do accompany those. Additional material, all of the old exams are posted on the registry website. Okay. I haven't changed the format or the basic style of the exams at all. Okay. So if you looked at any of those old exams, you see that there's basically it's a collection of just some ACT-based questions. Those are drawn from the notes, and then problem-oriented questions. The problem-oriented questions tend to be similar to ones, not exactly the same, but similar to things that you'll see in the old exams, or things that arise in the problem sets. Okay, so we're never going to get an identical problem, but you know, there's only so many topics I can ask and only so many ways I can ask about them. So you should try these problems. You should get comfortable with solving this type of problem. If you just learn all the solutions, well, again, I'll change it each time, so it might not be enough. But if you start doing these problems and say, oh, yeah, really know how to do that, you know, you should go ahead on the exam. Okay. Yes. So don't do big data analysis on the exams themselves, because you're likely to get somewhat surprised if you do. So, like I said, I would strongly advise you to go over the notes and try all of the problems and become comfortable with solving the problems with the sample values that I've given you. If you have any questions, just send me an email and I'll be happy to, you know, meet you or answer the questions via email sort of any time up to the exam. So, you know, all the best. Good luck on all of your exams and whatever outstanding work you have to do. And so I'll see you guys at some point.